storming through the pod like our name is Onemia. When we're hanging out, recording in the back of the El Camino. As a kid, we were skids. No one knew us by name. Trash our own recording party because nobody came. I know we're not the one you thought you knew back in high school. Never going, never showing whenever we had to. Attention that we crave with episodes every Tuesday. We're sick of always hearing act our age. We don't want to waste our time. Become another podcast in society. Whoa, never fall in line. Become another victim of your conformity and back down.
Hell yeah. I was hoping it'd be something from them.
Dude, I looked at songs with 41 in them, and I was like, I'm just going to go with the band Sum 41. This is... so many good choices, but I was like, I'm going to go with the classic.
And, shit, my fucking dog's barking. I thought you could go with the, somehow, you remember the intro to that album? How that album starts?
Oh, yeah.
Children of the beast embrace to scorn and hate the human race. Consume the light that hugs the earth and aid the womb in giving birth to a group that will appear. And guide you through this final year. The dark armies then will come when the sum is 41. From memory, I think I got it.
Dude, that's impressive. I love how that album bookends with that. And then ends with the Pain for Pleasure bonus track. That's when...
Pain for Pleasure!
That was when they used to sneak in those bonus tracks, and you didn't know what was coming, so you had to like scan through the last song.
I love it, dude. That thing got so much airplay in my vehicle when I was in high school. So much, man. I still know every word of that song, the whole album probably.
I think they put out an album recently, and I really need to listen to it.
I feel like I owe it to them. They brought me so much joy over the years.
It's the least I can do.
Yep, I'll check it out. Yes. All right.
Yeah.
Great introduction. Lovely.
Yeah, welcome to episode 41 of Jay and Joey on the Record. I'm Joey.
I'm Jay.
This week, very interesting week, first of its kind. What are we doing?
I've been looking forward to this one ever since you put it on the spreadsheet we share. It's albums we both own, so stuff you also have on vinyl.
This was pretty dang fun because... like, clearly in the past, there's been some overlap on things, and I've listened to one random album here and there, but this is the first time I've gotten that full experience where, like, all six are on the disc, and I can't stop. I've just got to laser focus in.
That does take some doing. That is certainly something that has gotten some getting used to.
I'll tell you, man, I have a newfound respect for this process. And you having to do it. Because, I mean, there's so many times where I was listening to something and I'm like, dang, that makes me think of this. But I couldn't, like, pause and listen to the thing it made me think of. But
right. Yes, absolutely. I got to do it on the fly. I got to be like, oh, instinctually, oh, this feels like Rolling Stones. Okay, yeah, I'm feeling it.
Yeah.
It's like things like that. Like, yeah, it's pretty, I don't do a lot of other stuff while I'm doing this. Like, I'm not like also working on something else or anything. I am laser focused.
That's understandable, man. It's impressive. I don't know, like, I was so used to like doing other things and being able to pause and get distracted and then like come back to something if I have to, that yeah, this was a new kind of experience.
Okay, so I got one question and one comment. The new experience, the classical week. Picture doing this on the classical week, because it was just an absolute, like, what can you do?
Yeah. Did the song change? I don't know.
I have no idea. Yeah, so that's my comment. My question is, first of all, what's the most overlap do you think we've had up to this point? And also, I guess let's just start with that.
You know, I was really trying to think about that, and I was like, I'm pretty sure there's one week where I listened to two things. Oh, I'll tell you what it was. It was a best of week where I listened to Leo Kottke and the Statler Brothers, and then Roger Miller. So it was three. Yeah, so three out of ten that week.
The golden hits. I remember the golden hits. Okay. Golden Hits are good.
Yeah.
Okay, so anything else you want to talk about? I mean, I have some questions maybe later on about your experience. Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to say about it right off the bat here?
No, I mean, it was such a wild way to experience this. I can't imagine doing this 300 times. Or for 300 albums, I should say. 300 plus albums. And, you know, look, I own these albums, so I appreciate them all in different ways. And it was fun.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was hoping you'd say. Like, the actual experience of listening to these particular albums, was it different this time around than maybe before? Just because you're actually, like, sitting down and looking at stuff and, you know, writing things. So I don't know. That's my other question. Like, how different was it from that point of view?
It was so different because, like, it's hard to do much research and look things up. A lot of the albums I have didn't really have any sleeves inside. So, like, just the back is what you got. But looking through and thumbing through all of those, especially with one of them, was just a riot to have in my hands. It was definitely a little bit of a challenge. And it's like, oh, I want to get up and go to the kitchen and do this. And like, nah.
So let's kick it off. First one we've got this week. We're going chronologically this week. I don't know why, but we are.
Just felt right.
Yeah, felt like the right thing to do. We're going to kick it off with Tom Rush, the eponymous... bom, 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 Tom Rush. Yeah, Tom Rush, it's an eponymous seventh album, which I think is weird.
Yeah.
Oh, not only is it an eponymous seventh album, he has another album from earlier in his catalog also called Tom Rush.
I love it.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm out of
two
ideas.
Two eponymous albums. Of your own name, Tom Rush. I love it. All right, so where did your Tom Rush come from? Do you know?
I do. So this one, I'm now the third generation owner of. This was my grandfather's, my dad's dad, who I never knew, but I kind of got to know him through his albums, which my dad still has, and I've taken a chunk of them. He had some great stuff, like that the self-titled band album I took from my dad's collection, several others, honestly, all of the Tom Rush. But my dad grew up in the country in West Virginia, and his dad would like run this wire up the mountain and just get like long distance radio stations. And he got one from Boston that had Tom Rush, and that's how he fell in love with him.
That's awesome, man. Like, that's such an incredible tale, and it's been passed down to you. Yeah, that's really cool. My story for where my Tom Rush is nowhere near as interesting as that. It's from the Princeton Record Exchange in Princeton, New Jersey. I actually bought it on site.
Oh, nice.
For $2.
Good stuff, man. Classic singer-songwritery type, folksy type things.
Anything else this week from your grandfather's catalog? Just out of curiosity?
No. Not this week that I can think of. Yeah.
Okay, cool. All right, so what'd you think of Tom Rush here?
I like it, yeah. So I have a few of his Tom Rush albums, and they're all a little different in their own way. And I mean, this is essentially a cover album, but it's great, I think.
I was going to ask, so these other Tom Rush albums, are there a lot of covers on those as well, or is it more originals?
Did we it's a mix. Have a cover album?
Okay, so this is more like a dedicated cover album almost.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they're solid. So,
yeah.
See, this one came out in March of 1970 on Columbia. So, jumping right off the bat, what was the top track on the A side here?
I did like Driving Wheel a lot. I did like Drop Down Mama quite a bit and Lullaby.
So, I actually really like the whole A side. So, I mean, is Driving Wheel is a song by a folk singer named David Wiffen. And pretty much the only reason anyone has ever heard of it is because Tom Rush. Like, he took this kind of unheard of song and covered it. So this one's much more well known than the original.
Oh, nice. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty freaking cool.
I like Driving Wheel, though. It was a cool song.
Yeah, I'm wondering what else that guy may have written and who else may have gotten him some stretch. Yeah, like the build on it's great. I always get chills. The bass is pretty nice and shaky. Hey, I don't know how to talk about the end of the song, but it just kind of sprawls, and there's like this engine effect on the percussion that's pretty cool.
Yeah, and he's talking about like, I feel like some old engine, I've lost my driving wheel. Like he's kind of, he's calling an ex-lover, I think, and just like saying, hey, I miss you. My life is kind of a mess without you. You were my driving wheel, keeping me going on the straight and narrow, from what I can understand of the lyrics. It's, again, lyrics are another thing that's kind of hard to keep track of when you're going listening on the album, as opposed to like being able to stop it and stuff.
There's no denying the focus needed.
All right, so let's see. Drop Down Mama. That was a really funky one. I really dug that one.
Yeah, I mean, you said it perfectly. Like, it's funky. And it's got that, like, I don't know how to describe it, that, like, that really tight strum where you can tell they're just holding the strings really, really tight and kind of...
Yeah, and the drums on that thing are absolutely... Herbie Lavelle on the drums is actually... killing it on a lot of these songs. I have a lot of drum notes on this Tom Rush album.
Yeah, like I've listened to this several times before, but this is the first time where I was like, dang, that's pretty interesting drumming for, you know, what's essentially folk singer-songwriter stuff.
There's a cover of it by a band called the North Mississippi All-Stars. I don't know if you're familiar with them or not, but I think it's a pretty solid little fun little cover.
Nice,
anyway.
Yeah. Is it a super group or that's just the name they chose?
That's the name of the band, I believe.
Oh, nice. Okay. Fair play to you.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. What's the other one? Lullaby. That's that's our buddy Jesse Colin Young on that.
Yes.
Song.
Yeah, I completely forgot about that. And this might have been right before. Well, I know JCY had his like band career with the Youngbloods, but this is kind of his like first, like before he blew up as a solo guy.
Was it on one of the greatest hits? Didn't we have a Jesse Colin Young greatest hits or no? Am I wrong? I thought we did, but maybe I'm wrong.
Did we have a greatest hits? I know we had a live.
It was a live album. Yes. That's what it was. Was this on the live album?
You know, I swear it's either on that one or the other one we listened to.
I felt like I've heard, and I don't have the one it's actually on, so it has to be on the live album. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I swear I heard that thing before. Anyway, Tom Rush does a fine job with it. the orchestral accompaniment was very nice on that song.
Oh, dude, yeah. It's funny. Like, I would have never thought about it being a Jesse Colin Young song until this podcast, and it's so cool to have that connection now.
I know. I know it's my record collection, but there's so many things that this has made me really experience, artists that I really wouldn't have sought out to listen to just in my average everyday life. So I've enjoyed a lot of that. Like, I'm not going to normally sit down and listen to a Jesse Colin Young album probably, but I've enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just these random golden nuggets that have found their way into our ears.
Absolutely. All right. So then how about the B-side? Anything stand out to you there?
Wild Child. Again, Funky Colors of the Sun, got some Donovan vibes. Living in the Country, I really, really liked. Child Song, man, that thing kills me.
Wild Child was sweet, man. The bass tone on that one was really cool. There's a little electric guitar, which there's not a ton of electric guitar on this album.
Yeah.
A little funkier.
And the hi-hats are like really popping.
Yeah, that one rocks pretty good. See, what was the other one? Living in the Country. I like that one too. A nice little song about living in the country.
It was like this weird mix of folky, hippie, bluesy, alt country. Just like really good small town, rural life, man.
Oh, and Child Song was another one by a Canadian artist, Murray McLaughlin. I like that one too. That one was just really cool. I don't know what else to say about it. The whole album, honestly, I like the whole thing.
I just thought it was such a really nice closer. And just a beautiful, beautiful minimalism story about, you know, somebody leaving home, talking to their parents about, you know, it's time to go. It killed me. Yeah, it was a strong song of the week contender.
Ooh, I like that. That one jumped out to you right off the bat. I don't know. Maybe you didn't listen to this one first.
I listened to this one first, I think. Yeah.
I'm with you, man. There was not a song on this album that I didn't enjoy. There was something about every song that I really, really liked.
I'm with me. I really enjoyed it. Of course, I'll come back to it. And my last thought was, I really do think it would have been hilarious if we tacked this onto the Rush Week.
I did too. It would have been nice.
So enough of the prog stuff. Let's get going here with Tom Rush.
I think that would have been fully appropriate and probably
Should have been what we'd done, but worked out. Anything else you want to say about the Tom Rush album?
No, man. I think dude's still, I know he's still alive. He's 80, but I think he's still touring, which is incredible.
Yeah, I got into Tom Rush a little bit in college. I should have mentioned this earlier, but
yeah.
But the first time it's so weird. Tom Rush is one of those artists. I remember exactly where I was the first time I heard Tom Rush, which really? Is hilarious. Because for how many people is that the case? Like, oh yeah, I remember when I heard Tom Rush,
and especially at that age. Yeah.
Yeah. My buddy and I were driving up to Rapid City, South Dakota on a long weekend in college because we wanted to see the Mount Rushmore. Mm. Total waste of time, by the way. Don't ever go to Mount Rushmore. It sucks. Black Hills are awesome, but don't waste your money going to Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had a Tom Rush mixed CD that he had created and we listened to most of the way.
That is so random.
Yes.
Just a couple of dudes in college in the mid-aughts.
Just cruising through the sand hills of Nebraska listening to Tom Rush.
I love it. That's incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. Yeah, yeah. I was curious because he's definitely one of those smaller, folky dudes who most people may not know about. So that's awesome.
Yeah, he's got some cool songs about trains. Anyway. Yeah. I digress. Tom Rush, college. Anyway, let's roll into the next one here. I'm curious. So our next one is Harvest, which is Neil Young's fourth studio album. Came out in February, 1972, on Reprise. I didn't think you were much of a Neil Young fan. Why do you own this? Are you? Am I incorrect?
Let me ask you something first.
Okay.
Have you ever bought the same album twice?
Yes, I absolutely have.
Okay. I've done it twice. This is one of them. And like you said, like, I'm not much of a Neil Young guy, but my wife really likes Neil Young. So I was like, oh, I should get Harvest. And then I did that twice. What's the album that you bought twice?
So that's the thing. At least you bought Harvest twice. Harvest is a pretty damn solid album to own. The album I own twice is the Tim Weisberg, Dan Fogelberg cop.
Yeah!
I own that one twice.
That is amazing, dude. Of all the ones that we've talked about. I love it. Now, like, I've definitely bought stuff on CD and then bought the album version later. I have a few things like that, but this and an Emmylou Harris album I bought twice, and so I had two copies, and a buddy of mine in grad school, he used to give me rides home. He was a big Neil Young fan, and I was like, oh, let me give you Harvest, and I gave him like the really, really good copy, and my copy is absolutely beat to crap. This one I had to do it on Spotify because I mean, it was, there's skipping and then there's like jumping. And
it's my Pink Floyd, The Wall experience all over again.
I was like, dude, this is exactly Jay listening to Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Yeah, man. You can see the ripples when it's spinning on the table. You know you're in trouble.
Yeah. So yeah, man, what do you think of Harvest?
I really like it. It's got some of his big tunes on it, you know, the more famous tracks, but I think it's a really solid album. It's kind of interesting. It came together just kind of on a whim, apparently. He was hanging out in Nashville and was like meeting with his record exec, hey, let's put together an album. And they just kind of put together over a really short period of time with some really cool guest musicians who were also in Nashville.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of a cool album.
That's freaking insane. I know I looked a little bit at some of the backup singers and things like that. That's incredible. I had no idea that it was that kind of, not slapdash because it's a well-executed album, but
let's jump it out to you here.
I'm gonna tell you what, man, like maybe it was just like where I was and like some of the stuff that happened these past few weeks, but I didn't mind this one bit.
I really enjoyed it.
Like out on the weekend, I was like, this is actually kind of a fun little jam. It's got some grit and gristle. Like maybe I was softening. It was just kind of like the type of song that I needed at that moment.
Yeah, it's really, really kind of an easy country pop tune, but man, the pedal steel on that on, Ben Keith on the pedal steel. You know, just kind of a haunting element to it a little bit with the pedal in there. And then Neil Young's just wailing on the harmonica. It's a nice little tune.
Yeah, the pedal steel just rips on this entire album.
It does. Yeah, there are some really good... there's some other good instrumentation on here too, but the pedal steel really stands out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Anything on the next couple tracks there?
A Harvest I liked. A Man Needs a Maid. I mean, whatever. Sweet tune. Heart of Gold. I'll tell you what, man. Like, maybe I'm turning on towards Neil Young. I just have really good memories of... There was a show on the Outdoor Channel called Gold Fever, where these just, like, local yokels used to go panning for gold in Alaska. And there's this one episode I still remember clearly where all these people are just, like, huddled up singing this together.
I love it. That is nice. It's a cool song. It's funny. This is one of the ones that kind of came together really quickly. So Neil Young was in Nashville, like I said, to film for the Johnny Cash show.
Okay.
And also in town for that same show were James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt. So they are actually the backup vocals on this song.
She sounds so good on this.
Oh, man. It's terrific. And it's such a cool song. And Neil Young put this together because he had a back injury, actually, and couldn't play his electric guitar standing. So it came together as kind of an acoustic piece because of that. So, and it works perfectly. It's such a cool song.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting that this is the one that was, or one of them that was written kind of quickly, because it has like a refinement to it, but also has like a loose, I don't know, just like a loose kind of jangly, like quick sound to it. Raw, I guess.
Yeah, I honestly, I think Neil Young, man, his harmonica playing adds so much to this. Like, he's just like, all these songs, but in particular Heart of Gold, like, he's just wailing on that harmonica. It's so cool. How about the B-side then?
I like Old Man because the Dandy Banjo and Linda Ronstadt. There's a World, iconic strings, almost Broadway-esque. The Needle and the Damage, I've got a note on that that, I don't know, I thought it was interesting. And then the closer words.
Old Man is another one that the backup vocals are James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt. And it's another one that I think they add so much to it. Like, if it was just Neil Young singing, I might not enjoy it as much. It's such an extra added something to those songs.
Dude, they really do add just so much depth. And I mean, talk about lucking into two people to throw in the background with you.
Yeah. And once again, the pedal is awesome on that song too.
Yeah. Yeah, what else with you?
The Needle and the Damage Done, like you said, what's your note on that one?
I just thought it was so interesting how many 70s albums sneak in a live track. Like, we've talked about so many of those.
Yeah, just toss one in there for fun.
Like, yeah.
This one's really, really, I don't know, man. The first-hand account of your fellow musicians dying of heroin addiction all around you. It's just kind of, it's a pretty powerful song.
It's a very heavy, it's only like 2 minutes or something. And it's like, geez, this is... Ugh, can't imagine twice as long how I'd feel.
Let's see. And then anything on the last track there, Words?
I just think it's a really nice sprawling number to go home on. Solid shredding, pounding piano.
It's funny you mentioned that because that was kind of my note too. Like, I don't mind going out on an extended jam. And it, in fact, in some albums, it's the appropriate way to end the album. Like, just give me a little something sprawling to kind of finish it up and I'm good.
Yeah, man. So what are your final thoughts on this album?
Another one I pretty much enjoyed all the way through. Yeah. Like, there were a couple odd ones, but for the most part, all the way through, really, really solid. And he's got a lot of help, too. I mean, like I said, James Taylor and Linda Ronstadt, the other guys from Crosby, Stills, Nash are also on this. And he's some good musicians in here.
Dude, it was an all-star lineup. And I didn't mind it one bit.
I didn't mention the studio band for this. It's called the Stray Gators, which I think is a great name for a studio band.
This is what was the one that you mentioned a few weeks ago Bob Seger?
Yeah, the LA one. What were they? No, not the LA one.
Mississippi.
Yeah. Oh, shoot.
I can't remember. But now that you say that, like, I would love to know the Wrecking Crew. That was one of them. I don't remember if that was Bob Seger, but
I don't think so, but yeah, we have mentioned the Wrecking Crew. Bob Seger's other one was the Muscle Shoals rhythm section, just that's, as an FYI. Yeah.
That's who it was. Now I'm so curious. Like, I would love to watch a miniseries on backup bands.
Oh, dude, how great would that be?
Oh, my God. Especially, I would love it. So many of them are getting so old. Like, God, and like what that looks like now.
Yeah, show me the studio band doc. I want to see that. Like, I've mentioned this before, but have you yet watched, what is the number? It's either 50 Feet from Stardom or something like that. It's about backup singers.
No.
I can never remember the number.
Yeah.
It's really cool, man. But you know, something like that on studio bands would be sick.
Sweet, man. What's next?
We've got Sweet Revenge, which is the third album by John Prine. Came out in 1973 on Atlantic. It was recorded at the same studio as the album we just talked about, Harvest.
Really?
Yes.
Dude, some magic going on in there. That's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. The nice. Quadrophonic Sound Studios in Nashville.
Okay. Dang.
How did you come by your John Prine?
So I love John Prine. I've been a big fan for a really long time. He's probably my favorite songwriter ever. I listened to this one last because I was like, I know I'm going to adore it. It's my favorite album of 1970.
This one, I know where I got it. It's from All Sales Vinyl, which is a record store here in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Okay.
It's all right. Don't tag him in any social media posts this week. I'll just say that because selection isn't a lot better than what's in my basement. Like, you just walk in there and yourself's like, can't call yourself a record store if the swap meet down the street has more records than you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I feel you. I don't know. I mean, at least they had John Prine the day you walked in.
That's a good name for a record store, too. All Sales Vinyl is kind of funny, but
yeah.
Get some more stuff. All right. So this is one of your standout all-time favorite albums. So talk about it. What is it about this album?
I think it's just, I don't know, man. It's just got this, it's got John Prine's like wit. It's mm-hmm. got his heart. It's got his just like honesty and love and affection. And I don't know. I just think he knows how to tell a story.
He does, man. It's just like you said, honest, grit, and love. Like, it's just this awesome. He's just a cool songwriter, man. It really is great.
I mean, from top to bottom, there's just so much I love about this.
And I basically, this is one of those ones, man. I didn't take any notes on the first song, and it's one of my favorite songs on here. I love Sweet Revenge. I absolutely love it.
Dude, it is such an anthem. First off, this is absolutely my song of the week. It's so hard to talk about because I love it so much. You know, it's just such a proclamation. The lyrics are phenomenal. It's soulful. It's bold. It's like an alt-country classic. The backing vocals, Sissy Houston and the Sweet Inspirations both just kill throughout this album.
Mm-hmm. I honestly just wrote, I love this song. Like, there's nothing else. I mean, you kind of nailed it, though. I mean, the backup vocals are phenomenal throughout the whole thing. Like, such a cool song. What else on the A side? Christmas in Prison was another one that I was like, okay, this is just an amazing, soulful, heart-filled song. It's so cool.
It's so sad. It's kind of got the humorous moments that John Prine's known for. Like, he could just balance multiple worlds where it's like, God, this is so sad, but there's like a weird lightness to it at the same time.
It's funny. Like, he's so funny in a lot of these songs, just very subtly. It's just terrific.
Yeah, and I mean, the previous one and the next one are like that. Please Don't Bury Me. It's one of those, like, I think I could play this at my funeral type of songs.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dear Abby, like, it's a song about people who have written Dear Abby, and each letter leads into the next letter, and it's just so dang smart.
It's brilliant. It's hilarious. Do you know how he came up with that one? Because I actually found that out when I was looking. So he bought a sandwich on my album. It introduces the song by saying he bought a sandwich in Italy.
Okay.
And it was given to him wrapped in a newspaper. And the newspaper had some Dear Abby articles on it from the States. That's how he came up with the song.
Can you imagine sitting down for a sandwich in Italy? And there's Dear Abby looking at you.
Was yours live? Mine was live.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay, just making sure.
Dude, that's another one.
Different copies of this album? Yeah. Yeah. The crowd was into it, and he finished it off with a nice little joke. It's pretty hilarious.
I love when he, like, clearly messes up and just keeps rolling.
All right, so then what else on this the B-side then?
Onomatopoeia. I really like Grandpa Was a Carpenter, Mexican Home, 9-Pound Hammer, which is a cover, but...
Onomatopoeia is hilarious. I was like, all right, when's the onomatopoeia part coming? And then it hits you with it, and it's hilarious. How does it go? Is it bang with the gun, crash with the window, ouch with the... What is it? I don't remember. I should have written it down.
It's something like, bang with the pistol, crash with the window, ouch with the son of a gun.
Yes, perfect. Yeah. I couldn't remember how exactly it went, so I couldn't get the tune in my head. If I had the lyrics right, I think I could have come up with the tune, but I didn't have the lyrics at all, so there you go.
Yeah, just so dang funny.
Grandpa Was a Carpenter. That was really cool, like an homage to his grandpa, just doing cool grandpa things.
Yeah.
Like, really loved his honest and real lyrics on that song. That was a cool tune.
Yeah, it always gets me hooting and hollering because it's just like tribute to a Kentucky grandpa.
Yeah, just grandpas out there in the world just doing grandpa things, man.
Yeah, voted for Eisenhower because Lincoln won the war. Like, all right. Just like that's such a grandpa thing to do.
Yeah.
It's just grandpa logic.
Let's see, what was the other one?
Mexican Home.
Mexican Home. Yeah, that one was really cool because there was a variety of musicians and backup singers, some organ on there, little horns at the end. That's a jam. I really like that one. About being too damn hot in the house. Anyway.
That's what I love, man. The dude can just take like the most simple thing and make a fun little tune out of it.
It's terrific. Did you happen to look at all the people who've covered 9-Pound Hammer historically?
I looked at some, but I mean, that list was so dang long.
It was. There were so many of them on there. Yeah, I was just curious if you looked at it because there's things like, yeah. The Beatles are on there. I'm trying to think. There's a ton of bands on there.
I think, was Merle Travis the original guy, maybe? Or no, there was the original guy. This song is from like the early 1900s or something. But Merle Travis, I think, did a famous version. But the one that I was most familiar with besides this one is, I think, the Nitty Gritty Dirt Band on Will the Circle Be Unbroken.
Nice, dude. I'll have to check that out.
It's, man, that thing's got some gas on it.
What's your final prime thoughts?
I love it. Yeah. We miss you, John.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the fourth one this week. Hey, we're making progress. Dreams and All That Stuff. This is the eighth studio album by Leo Kottke. This is, I believe, my final Kottke album in the collection. But we've done a few of them.
I wasn't thinking about that. I think this really is the end of the Kottke line.
Yeah. So you own this one as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where did it come from?
I had a friend who was giving away albums in Columbia, South Carolina, and it was in their box. So I got it for $3.99.
Hmm. The cover is what grabbed you, right?
Dude, that thing is so unsettling.
I love it. It looks to be, I think it's Monument Valley in Utah, or whatever that little valley is going into the Moab area. And then it's got Leo in a very nice shirt. I love that shirt. Actually, I love both of these shirts. But then the person to his left is wearing a frightening little mask. What is that mask?
Dude, no thank you. It is so creepy. I don't even know how to describe it. Yeah.
Wait.
Yeah.
I love that there's no words on it either. It's just, here's this image. Actually, maybe in the upper left-hand corner, it says Leo Kottke, Dreams and All That Stuff, but it's way up there, real small.
Yeah, and so tiny.
Yes. This one is the only completely instrumental Kottke album released on the Capitol Records line. I was looking forward to it because I knew it was an instrumental.
See, I didn't know it was instrumental, and I was so glad it was.
I was looking forward to it. Yeah, it's funny because the last one we did was not, and I was like, okay, let's get back to 6th and 12th string guitars, Leo Kottke. Mm-hmm. So I was definitely looking forward to this. Again, instrumentals sometimes are hard to take notes on. What really jumped out to you about this one?
I mean, first off, this was the one that I loved holding in my hands and seeing the parentheses of the song titles.
Yes, I'm glad he did that again.
Because you don't get that on the digital version at all. When Shrimps Learn to Whistle, which I think I loved on the Best Of album.
Mm-hmm.
It just a blast. I loved it still. It kind of vacillates between dark and moody and sunny and jammy. Twilight Prosperity I also really liked.
Both of those, dude. Did you happen to read? So just like the 6 and 12 string guitars album we talked about, he's got little things written in the on the album notes after all of these songs. Did you happen to write down these? Because I'll feed them to you if you don't know those.
I didn't write down the one for when Shrimps Learned to Whistle and the album's out on the shelf. But I did for Twilight Property because it was my favorite parenthesis. And it's curious if you had a favorite parenthesis.
I think it might be that one, actually, Twilight Property. But I also liked When Shrimps Learn to Whistle. So it is from a speech on détente or warships in the Bosphorus by Khrushchev at the UN. That is what it says.
Well, yeah, well, like, where does that even come from? What does that even mean? Is there a website that tells me what the parentheses of Kottke songs mean?
Yeah, it's sort of... Man, the other one about When Shrimps Learn to Whistle, I mentioned this before, but that one features three Bills backing him up. He's got Bill Berg on percussion, Bill Peterson on bass, and Bill Barber on the synth. So three Bills.
Man, I completely forgot about the three Bills.
Hell yeah. So let's see, Twilight Property. So that was the one you liked the parentheses. Hit me with them.
What English realtors call houses that have nothing going on for them anymore except the ghosts in the attic.
I
wonder if that's really what they're called. You wouldn't lie to us, would you, Leah?
Honestly, that's what I thought. I was like, is this a real phrase that they use? I want to know.
Yeah, I have no freaking clue. But, yeah.
How about Cal Hand with the steel guitar on that one?
That was one of my notes. Like, it's almost lo-fi, and that's mm-hmm. steel guitar... is smashing.
It's so subtle, but it's so good. Like, it's really, really good.
I was like, dang it, I wish I could skip back.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Some of those slow ones are ones I just want to go back and experience again, because it's just like, it really sets a mood. The steel guitar really mm-hmm. puts you in the right mood for that.
Yeah.
And then the last one, honestly, Bill Cheatham. Which is, in parentheses, a fiddle tune. So I assume they're playing a fiddle tune on guitars, and they rip it up. It's a guitar duet. It's awesome.
Man, that's what I was thinking. I was like, this is a fiddle tune without a fiddle, yet it sounds like a fiddle.
Yeah, absolutely wonderful. Like, I could listen to hours of this. Any mm-hmm. instrument, really. And that's the other thing that I got to thinking here. Like, I would listen to anyone play any instrument as well as Leo Kottke plays the guitar. Like, whatever instrument you have. If you play it this well, I'll listen to you.
I feel you, man. What do you got on the B-side?
Not really much. The Why Ask Why I really liked.
Mm.
Little piano in there, like an acoustic piano duet. How about you? I like the title of track 9.
Oh, yeah. I was going to mention my appreciation for that, which is entitled...
Taking a Sandwich to a Feast. That's hilarious. God. That's the only one that doesn't have any description after the song title. I was like, that's perfect. Didn't necessarily say anything else.
Yeah, like, okay, I get this. I know where you're coming from. You're that guy. Yeah, it's a really dang good tune. It's kind of bigger, a little louder. It's almost got like a Cat Stevens vibe to it.
I had the exact same notes, dude. It sounds like Cat Stevens could sing over this, is what I wrote. verbatim.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. But totally felt that. It was cool.
Yeah, the B-side, this is one where I was like, dang, I wish I could tell where the tracks were changing. Because like Constant Traveler and Why Ask Why sounded a little similar in a good way. Hole in the Day, which was bled into by Taking a Sandwich to a Feast. Like, I didn't really realize when that had started.
Mm-hmm. That one was just kind of a little melancholy song. I don't even mention the leadoff track, which is a medley, a smash-up of San Antonio Rose and America the Beautiful, which has some outstanding slide playing on it. I wanted to mention the slide playing. But the, let's see, so Mona Roy on the way out. How about that one? Anything about that one?
I thought it bookended really, really nicely. Maybe I was just jonesing for it, but I swear the guitar sounded like a flute at one point.
Certainly possible. like you said, bookend it really nicely. A minute and 48 seconds to end the album, which is the opposite of what I said earlier. You know, sometimes this big sprawling track is a good ender. This was perfect because it was a minute and 48 seconds.
It has almost like a little afterword.
Like a little mint after a fine meal.
Oh, man. Yeah. What are you thinking going out?
Really, really nice. I mean, love the instrumentation on here with all the different instruments. The steel guitar was cool, but he's such a virtuoso, like an amazing guitar player. So
I'm with you, man. I was thrilled with it. Another solid outing from our boy. I'd go see him live if he ever shows up somewhere near here.
And I really, again, the fact that it was an instrumental, I was looking forward to it. I just want to sit here and be taken on a little journey, let my mind wander, not have to look at lyrics and stuff. It was a nice reprise from the rest of the week. So what's up next? We have got Country Life by Roxy Music. This is their fourth studio album. It came out November 15, 1974 on Island Records in the UK and Atco in the United States.
Nice.
What do you know about Roxy Music?
Man, I love Roxy Music. This is, no lie, this is my favorite album of 1974. Ooh. I just think they were just so far ahead of their time. Like, usually I don't care about the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but when it comes to somebody like Roxy Music getting in, I'm so happy that a band like that finally got their due.
Yeah, man, there is so much stuff on here that I was like, wow, like, I can see what came from some of the stuff they're doing here. And 1974 is pretty early for a lot of what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of astonishing. And this was like their fourth album or something?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where did this come from?
This one came from Lunchbox Records in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Excellent. Mine came from Lincoln Vintage Vinyl in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Okay. Man, that place comes through for you.
I put a little money down on this one. This was one of my more expensive used albums, I think, that I've purchased.
Now, is this the one, the Booby album, or is yours censored?
So I have the Booby album. Which one do you have?
I absolutely have the Booby album.
It's the one to own if you're going to own one of them.
Dude, yeah. Why waste your money? As well, if you're gonna pay for the goods.
Have you seen the censored one?
Yeah, I have.
Out in the wild? It's just the tree, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it is just the tree.
So the models on the front actually contributed to some of the songwriting on this album. They helped a German translation for one part of one of the songs, so they get a credit for that.
That's so awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, they're credited on the lyric sheet for the German translation in one of the songs.
I love it so much.
So let's jump into Roxy Music. You said this is your favorite album of the year. What about it makes it so?
Dude, I mean, this is one. I mean, all of these I can talk about a lot for the most part, but I mean, the thrill of it all starts off just such a massive rock and roll song. Like, there's bravado, the drums are just like clashing like thunder. It's just like this unrelenting beast that becomes more ethereal with time, and there's like power pop and nice sax.
And John Gustafson laying down a bass line that is sick as hell.
I'm telling you, man, like, I would have loved to have been in the recording of this just to see it pieced together.
Man, I love a band that has a dedicated saxophonist oboe player. Give me something like that. Like, Andy McKay is on here playing oboe and saxophone, and that's all he does. And he writes a few of the songs, and I love it. Give me that.
Yeah. And, man, he cooks on this next song. Just,
absolutely. 3 and 9. Like, I was having trouble parsing through the lyrics, but it is a sweet little swinging tune and more good bass too.
Yeah. And there's like this cool part with drum fills, but also like a little harmonica tooting in the background to that.
Mm, yes.
Oh, no, man.
I mean, I'll talk about any of them you want to talk about, yeah. My friend. All like, I want is you, man.
Yeah.
Run a little longer, dude. We got some sweet feedback. They're doing really cool stuff with the guitar tones. It's and it's just a quick little stomper in and out under 3 minutes, but it rips.
Dude, it does. Yeah. It shreds like the pianos, or it's like they're being played with a hammer. It's like Beatles on glam. I don't know. It's just nuts and beautiful.
How about the next couple?
Yeah, like...
Out of
the blue, man. Like, there's a transition into like a really classic, extremely like golden god guitar shred that I absolutely love. The rhythm breakdown that like leads into that solo is just
I know exactly what you're talking about, dude. I wrote, here's what I wrote. Ooh, they have some cop show cymbals and bass followed by some massive guitars. Because it was like the real quick cymbals and then like the bass solo and then just massive guitar shredding. Awesome.
Yeah, this was very close to my song of the week.
Yes. It's just a massive sci-fi sounding tune. Out of the Blue is super cool.
Dude, what about you? I have so much on so many of these.
If It Takes All Night was great, but I didn't take any notes. Bittersweet, though, the leadoff track for the B-side was just really wild. Man. Like, really wild.
It's so theatrical and spacey and bizarre, and it fits so well.
It does. Like, the almost spoken word lyrics at times, and then... Like, they bring in the strings and the oboe to kind of calm things down at times, but then really, really weird. And that's the one with the German lyrics.
Like, on one hand, it doesn't fit in at all, yet it does, because that's what rock music is. It's like, let's just try this and see.
Oh, maybe the first time I've said this on the podcast, the oboe was phenomenal on that song.
You know, I absolutely honestly, phenomenal. I was racking my brain. I was like, classic week doesn't count. Where else have we heard an oboe? And I couldn't place one.
I can't either, but it shreds on that song. Let's see. Any of the last couple here? Triptych?
Dude, Triptych? Triptych, it's like borderline Middle Ages at times.
Is that a harpsichord? What is that? I couldn't figure it out.
I didn't know if it was a harpsichord or that like little tiny box piano that is kind of akin to that. Yeah, Casanova comes slamming in. I'll tell you one thing about like Casanova and A Really Good Time. Like they're especially on A Really Good Time, like they're just such the antithesis of so many rock songs from that era, because they're almost like empowering and positive and not sleazy, like while singing about women. With it's like, oh, we're not objectifying them. It's just,
I agree, man. You're right. A Really Good Time was really sick. I like the lyrics on Casanova too. You the hero, so many times you've loved and didn't linger, now my finger points at you, another loser. Like, get
him. Yeah, calling dudes out, love it.
What else you got? You want to talk about Prairie Rose? You want to talk more on A Really Good Time?
Dude, I love Prairie Rose.
Me too.
It's slide guitar, gonzo sax, huge drums, the bass,
screaming sax solo.
Yeah,
it cooks.
I thought it was a Herculean closer.
That's a great song to go out on. Absolutely, I was ready to. It was perfect way to end it. Almost like pre Talking Heads sounding stuff.
Oh, sure,
that one.
Dude, yes, because the whole time I was thinking, like, man, if I had seen this live, I would have been dancing and jumping like a goof. And when you said Talking Heads, I'm like, yes, like that kind of like weird bounce and jump dance. Yeah.
All right. Final thoughts then on Roxy Music Country Life.
Clearly, I love it. I don't know what else. Yeah. They were just so ahead of the game.
Really fun time. Absolutely a blast to listen to this week. All right. Let's finish her up. Last one on the docket today. Number 6, Toys in the Attic. It's the third studio album by Aerosmith. Came out in April 1975 on Columbia. Did you realize all the albums we listened to this week came out in a 5-year span?
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I was going to bring that up. Is like, this is the most tightly bundled string of years I think we've had.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
five from 1970 and 1975. I guess that could be six, depending on your
definition, you know, but still. Yeah. But
Toys in the Attic, dude. What, where did your Toys in the Attic come from? Let's start there again.
So here's the thing. I was thinking more John Prine came from Papa Jazz in Columbia, South Carolina. But let me tell you, I bring that up because I'm glad you've been asking this, because my very first note is I know where every album in my collection came from except this one. Like, I literally have no clue how this ended up on my shelf. Like, I didn't buy it. I don't think I did. But
I like that.
Yeah. Like, I swear when you reach a certain point in owning albums, this album just like magically appears on your shelf. Little record elf.
It's certainly possible. It sold 8 million copies in the United States, so it would make sense. I also do not know where this came from, which happens to me a lot more than it happens to you. If I don't know where it came from, it doesn't have a sticker on it. Fair assumption it came from that record auction.
Mm. I'm telling you, dude, I zero clue. None.
So what do you think of Toys in the Attic then?
I mean, it's definitely not a bad rock and roll album by any means. This is only the second time I've actually listened to it. And yeah, it's got some highs and lows. But how about you?
I was a big fan listening to this thing this time around. It's one that I've mentioned before that, you know, my dad was a big record guy growing up. Absolutely remember this one on his shelf when I was a little kid listening to it. So some of the songs bring back that kind of memories, especially the lead off track, Toys in the Attic. Like, what an absolute scorcher right out of the gate. It's just relentless from the opening cymbal roll into the song. Like, it's one of my favorite Aerosmith songs, and I think it's underplayed.
It's a chugging semi-truck that just smashes right into you. I was surprised that it was from 1975, because it's a pretty heavy song.
It is, man. And the chorus is really hooky and good, too. Like, toys, toys, toys in the attic. Like, wild, ripping stuff. Like, it's a punk song. This is almost a punk song.
So I think I've mentioned it before, but I've seen them live. It was free. Ooh. And they opened with this. I'm almost 100% positive. And
what a great opener.
And this was like early 2000s, so they could have opened with so many things. And they just like come out with this song that like punches you in the mouth immediately.
I dig it, man. So that's one I absolutely remember from when I was a kid. Let's see, anything on these next couple of tracks before we get to Walk This Way?
I mean, I like Uncle Salty a little bit. Like, it's bluesy, a little glammy. Yeah.
I actually, parts of Adam's Apple I really enjoyed as well. Mm-hmm. Like, I got some Rolling Stones vibes out of some of it. Like, it's blues rock. It's a cool blues rock track.
Yeah, it's real steady. Like, that rhythm section is so good. I don't think I really thought much about Aerosmith's rhythm section until this album.
And I gotta say, like, Steven Tyler sounds pretty damn good on this album. There's some stuff later on where I'm like, ugh. But he sounds phenomenal on this album.
Yeah, he hasn't gone like full tilt Steven Tyler yet.
Right, exactly. So let's talk about Walk This Way. Man, I love Walk This Way. Let's just start up. It's so funky. Like, the bass line is so funky, and the whole rhythm section is funking this thing up like crazy.
I think it 100% deserves the classic status it has, because, jeez.
Man, like, unmistakable riff. The chorus is phenomenal. They're just hammering away on the drums back there. Like, I can see exactly why Run DMC chose to, you know, kind of do something with the song, because it's so funky.
Yeah, it's super funky. And it, I mean, it has such a nice beat between that. Yeah, built for sampling.
And he is kind of spitting the lyrics too at times. Like, he really is kind of spitting them at you. And then, like you said, just Tom Hamilton crushing the bass. Anything on Big 10-inch Record?
So,
did you know this was a cover? I had no idea this was a cover, dude. No idea.
I did know it was a cover, and I think it's hilarious that not only was it a cover, but the original they shipped out to radio stations, and the radio stations were like, absolutely not, because
a lot of little double entendre going on, believe it or not, with Big 10-inch Record.
And the thing is, it's like, it's not even clever. Like,
no, It's not. Like, it's so juvenile. I love it. I love that they chose to include it. I honestly do. I think it's hilarious.
Can you imagine the uproar this caused in the 1950s?
Oh, with, man.
Like, a record label or a radio station gets it. It's like, okay, let's hear this. And, like,
let's put this on.
Big 10-inch record. And it's like, not even hiding it. It's
Not at all.
I love just how stupidly in your face it is. And I imagine whoever originally wrote, I can't remember his name, was just cracking up the entire time.
Fred Weismantle is the original author of this song.
Dude.
I wonder if in the original presentation of the song, if the double entendre was as explicitly presented with the really long pauses in there and stuff. Like, I bet it was. I almost bet it was.
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I couldn't find it anywhere to check it out, but I bet it was. B-side kicks off with my song of the week, Sweet Emotion. Like, absolutely my favorite song of the week. Not even close.
It rips, dude. Like,
absolutely. Like, the bass line to open it up, and then just rolls through the whole thing. Boom, boom. And then it comes screaming in with that unmistakable riff. It's so heavy. It's a great song.
Yeah, dude, that's what I was saying about the intro of my notes. It's just like, that bass is so freaking gnarly. And then, yeah, you got Joe Perry's famous licks.
The drums are fantastic, too, on that one. Just big, monstrous, pounding drums. It's so hard and funky. Like, it's such a cool song.
I literally said it's such a cool song. It is, like,
I nearly wept. It was I feel like it's kind of a precursor to some stuff that would come later too. Like, I hate to say this, because I feel like there's some Red Hot Chili Peppers in there with that funkiness of the bass and then just the wild guitar and the drums. Man, like, honestly,
I can hear it though, because there's the funkiness, but there's also this like cool scratch effect that is happening that was just, I mean, something that was so present in 90s music.
Oh, yeah. Yes, absolutely. Shit, man, that's such a cool song. Okay. Let's see. Anything else on the way out then?
No More, No More. A great song about being on the road and a band that was like clearly already starting to hate each other. Round and Round. The song was heavy, like Sabbath territory heavy.
It was, dude. Absolutely. That was my note, was this is like a Zeppelin or Sabbath heavy metal riff on this song. Just a big trudger.
Yeah, that was one where, while I've listened to this before, like, it surprised me the second go around, where I'm like really paying attention. I'm like, dang, they got deep and dark.
And then they went out on a ballad, which is You See Me Cry. I have one funny note about this. So apparently they were on a radio station, a Boston radio station. DJ Mark Parento of WBCM FM played the song for them. And Steven Tyler liked it very much and suggested that the band cover it because he was so messed up in the head he couldn't remember it was them. And Joe Perry responded by saying, "It's us, fuckhead."
That's so amazing, because when you were telling that story, I was like, is this not their song? And okay.
It is. He was so messed up, he had no idea.
Oh my God. That's amazing.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, that makes me wonder that. I wonder how many artists have covered their own stuff.
That would be interesting to find out. I bet it's happened. Had to have happened.
Surely. Yeah. Like, somebody heard like one version of it and then later on was like, yeah, let me do this again for my next album.
Totally morphed it into something else. That would be interesting too, to see how much they changed it. Yeah. Interesting. All right, so final thoughts on Aerosmith here.
Like, look, how much will I go back to this? Probably won't. But it's not leaving my shelf unless it disappears in the middle of the night as it appeared. But it's a dang good rock album, man.
The record elf will take it and pass it on to a new owner at some point.
Yeah, what'd you think?
I loved it. This was probably my favorite album. Nah, that's not true. It's a tough week to pick a favorite album, honestly, dude. Yeah. This was a week of some pretty dang good albums all the way through.
Yeah, there was some heat this week. And I mean, mine would be a neck and neck with Roxy Music and John Prine. But I mean, they all hold very strong sway.
Very positive. A lot of probably 5.5s and 6s being handed out this week, maybe even higher.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you.
All right. So let's finish this baby up. You got a question for me? I've got one for you.
Yeah, I do. So I've got a little bit of trivia again this week. So it's funny you mentioned how close everything was in the year that it was released, because I want to ask you a few things, and you're going to tell me if it was 1970, 1972, 1973, 1974, or 1975. So the first one, Mick Jagger is fined 200 pounds for possession of cannabis.
I'm going to say 1972 for that one.
That was 1970.
Okay.
So the Betamax is introduced.
1972.
Oh, no. If you flip that 2 upside down, though, you're getting the 5.
Oh,
1975. This one I think you're really going to appreciate.
Okay.
The Summer Jam at Watkins Glen with over 600,000 people and featured The Grateful Dead, Allman Brothers, and The Band.
Ooh, that sounds very fun. I'm going to say that's 1971.
Ooh, it's 1973.
Ah! I'm going over, bro. I should just count 72. All right, what else we got?
A dozen eggs cost 52 cents.
1972.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. 50-50 shot, baby.
Now, this one you might know because it's kind of famous. So the Cleveland Indians forfeit their game after 10-cent beer night leads to mayhem and violence throughout the stadium and onto the field. This is one where I've... Yeah.
I'm going to say 74.
It was.
I've seen footage of that one.
That one.
Mayhem. One of a handful of mayhems that happened at baseball parks. There was also Disco is Dead night one time. And they blew up a bunch of records in the outfield and it caused utter chaos.
Yeah, people running onto the field, throwing their records and wanting to destroy things. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, man, baseball had some good promotions in the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Gotta get those asses in the seats.
And the last one, I'm gonna throw this one on there. So we've already said the year. I thought this was so funny because of the word, and it makes me wonder how easy the rest of the event was. So Libby Childers wins the 43rd National Spelling Bee by spelling croissant.
C-R-O-I-S-S-A-N-T.
Croissant? Yes. Croissant.
Yes! I'm going to say that is 73.
It was 70, but...
Shit!
I'm telling you, dude, I would love to see the words that led to croissant being the most difficult.
I know! How old are these kids? Come on!
Yeah, now, I mean, you're getting, like, weird scientific, like, periodic table elements, words winning it, and this is, like... different times. All right, man, what do you got for me?
All right, mine's a pretty easy one, but these are questions I was definitely curious about this week. So you got to get your hands on some vinyl this week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just curious about the experience, honestly. If you were going to do it again, where you're going all 6 albums in 1 week, what is one thing you would do differently than you did this time?
I think the thing that I would do differently would be, one, not do it around dinner time.
Yes.
So I'm not, like, hungry and constantly thinking about the kitchen. I think I would listen first, research later.
Uh-huh.
So I'm not, like, getting distracted since I, like, can't pause or anything like that.
Sure.
And this one I listened to actually through speakers. And I think the next time I would listen through headphones. Just to have it, like, more directly into my ears.
Okay. That was one of my other questions, actually, is if you were going to listen to this again, would you do it through speakers or headphones? Well, we'll skip that one. I have two more questions, though. So what's one thing that surprised you about doing it this way?
The thing that kind of surprised me the most is just how focused you have to be. And it's like, if one moment passes, like, you aren't getting that back.
No rewind. Yeah.
Yeah. And, absolutely. And just how much fun it really is. Like,
it is good.
Yeah, like holding the album, looking through. Mm-hmm. Like, I have other stuff where I have like the booklet and everything inside, or like a poster or something inside that I can kind of like flip through and check out. And I don't know, man. There's just something about the tangible, like the connectivity in that realm.
There's definitely some negatives to it, but there are absolutely a lot of positives too. Like the physical, having it in your hand and mm-hmm. looking at it and thinking about it, and all, yeah. you know, the little, like you said, the little sayings on the Leo Kottke album. You wouldn't see that digitally.
Yeah, yeah. I'm curious, like, what you have done, like, how you've changed your approach to this, what experiences you found have like, worked the best and kept you focused.
I definitely need a routine, so I got to do it the same way every time. Okay. Get into my routine. Like you, I learned pretty quickly that doing a little bit of research after the fact is a lot easier than trying to do it while you're listening to the songs.
Okay.
I still get distracted sometimes, but I do my best. But I just got my kind of rituals that I just do every single time. Like, I get a Google Doc pulled up, laid out the way mm-hmm. I want it laid out. I start plugging stuff into it. And then I do a ton of stuff before I even put on the first record.
Nice,
just to
man.
To get ready.
Yeah, I definitely use a Google Doc and I try to prep it as much as possible. But, like, I mean, sometimes I'm like, well, I'm doing this digitally. I can pause and then come back. But this week, I was, like, struggling very quickly to like have my notes doc ready, like as soon as the record started. I was like, oh god, yeah, that I should have asked you for advice.
And I got one last question. I know this is a long week. You can edit out a lot of the stupid shit that I said.
I think yeah, this may pass our new wave of British heavy metal week. We'll see.
All right, last one though. If you could redo one week and listen to it in this manner where you're actually using all discs, what week would you do?
I mean, of course, week 3 with the album covers, where we got Dixie Dregs, we've got Sabotage, we've got Kirith Ungol.
Yeah.
The classical week, even though I know it would have been stupid hard, but I also would have been able to listen to everything as it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
The Rush week, honestly. The new wave of British heavy metal. So I listened to 2 of those on vinyl, actually, the Iron Maiden ones. But dude, I need to buy denim and leather so bad.
Hell yeah.
There was the punk week. I don't remember what week it was, but whenever we listened to it was The Places Where We Live, just so I could hear Boston live.
Oh my goodness. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Or not live, that's yeah. A great one. Yeah, over the that's another one that I need to buy. Where I'm like, what is wrong with me? Whatever week that we listen to, there was one week, I think it was the food week, where we listened to Head East, Cat Stevens, and Three Dog Night, and I loved all of those.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, dude. There are several. It's tough to choose just one, honestly.
Yeah, I would have a tough time picking one week to listen over to again anyway. So let's finish her up. What do you got? Some nice closing words?
Here we go, man. Do you want to listen to the same thing as other people you know? Well, subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and tell others about us. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter at JandJoeyPod. We have a Buy Me a Coffee. You can find those things in our Spotify playlist through the link tree in the show notes. And as always, be good to each other, and long live Tina.